Good morning. We're going to call the Government Operations and Elections Policy Committee meeting to order. Representative Pugh, could I have a motion on the minutes from February 19th?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes for February 19th.
Thank you, Representative Pugh. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the minutes on February 19th, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Thank you, members. Obviously, we're starting quite late due to the committee meeting in front of us. If we could, try and keep everything as tight as possible today in comments to make sure that we can get through the full agenda in a timely fashion. With that, we'll bring up the first bill on the agenda, which is House File 288. And we'll welcome Representative O'Neill. Looks like Representative Yaruso. Let me get the motion to Jobs. And with that, Representative O'Neill, I will move your bill, House File 288, to be referred to the Committee on Jobs. Welcome to the committee and proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I also have an author's amendment that I would like to have moved.
Okay, I will move the A3 for Representative O'Neill, her author's amendment. Representative O'Neill, to your amendment.
Yes, thank you, Chair. My amendment just tightens up the language a little bit to make it more clear. It was something that the agencies that we've been talking to for over 2 years about this particular bill and this particular language, this was the last bit of comfort that they needed to be able to move forward with this bill. And so it basically clarifies that this is not retroactive. So anything, you know, I'll talk about my bill in just a second, but to the amendment, anything that the agencies had required of the engineers that have already passed into law or rule or statute, then that would stand. And so this does not undo anything retroactively. And that was the final bit of comfort language that the agencies needed to move forward with their support.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Any discussion to the A3, which is the author's amendment to get it in the shape that she would prefer? Seeing none, all in favor of the A3? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The A3 is adopted. Representative O'Neill, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair. So, very simply, this bill is something that has been worked on between the professional engineers, which I'm very, very happy to have Representative Yaruso here with me today because she is a professional engineer and has experienced this complication that has arisen. And what has happened is professional engineers have been slightly overlooked in the rulemaking process. And so they have a very high-level license, I would say maybe to the highest level of your profession. She would say yes. So, and what has happened since then is agencies have continued to require additional certifications for them that are actually below their standard, that their licensure standard. And so, you know, three or four such certifications have come about. And it's been more of a challenge for the professional engineers to do their job as they already have a very, very high standard in their profession. And so these are lower level certifications. So they have actually been working with 10 different state agencies to say, can you put us first? Can you consider our professional licensure first before you look at adding additional requirements to us? And so they have agreed, and it was really more of a matter of not paying attention to the level that they have, as you know, many things go through quickly through state agencies, and so this is solidifying in statute to say let's consider their licensure first. It does have a component that also, if there is a need for a state agency in conditions of safeguarding life, health, property, and public welfare, that of course it would still be considered if that for to be the case, and that is what the amendment also does, is just clarify that with some technical changes. But that would come with a written affirmation of determination from the state agency.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Representative Yaruso, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first a correction, I have been a professional engineer, but I let that lapse when I got my teaching license. I'm here to testify to the level of expertise that is expected of people before they can become licensed as a professional engineer, and also some of the limitations that are put on their scope of practice and their obligations to that. you don't become a professional engineer by just getting an engineering degree. Not all engineers have professional engineering licenses. It's really intended for those who in some way offer engineering services to the public. So they're acting as a consultant or working on infrastructure kind of projects that have an impact on the public. In order to become a professional engineer in the state of Minnesota, you have to have a degree from an accredited engineering program. There are some exceptions to that, but they're subject to some pretty thorough review by the board. If you go to look up this board, it has the longest acronym ever. It's the Board of the AELSLAGID. Okay. It has architects and engineers and a bunch of other people in it. So you have to have a bachelor's degree in engineering from an accredited institution, and either during your senior year or after you graduate, you're allowed to take the fundamentals of engineering exam. That's an 8-hour exam that covers basic, you know, calculus and some basic science thing for all branches of engineering, but the 4 hours in the afternoon is specific to your field. And then you have to get a number of years of work experience. It's basically 4 years, but it varies depending on what your previous educational experience is. And that work experience has to be in your field and show evidence of increasing responsibility in the kinds of projects you're taking on and the level of expertise you have. And that has to be documented, and you have to get that signed off by supervisors you've had or bring in exhibits, you know, to prove. When I did it, I brought in a couple of project reports that I had done, and I had to get a statement from the engineer I had been working under. So it's a bachelor's degree plus 4 years of increasing levels of experience. In that sense, it's a little bit similar to what we do, you know, in medicine. People have to actually have supervised, you know, internships and residencies and whatnot before they get licensed. At that point, you're allowed to take the professional engineering certification exam, and that's another 8-hour exam, and it's specific to your field. In some branches of engineering, in civil engineering and mechanical engineering, it's actually narrowed down even farther. So if you're a civil engineer, you'd have to pick, you know, based on what area you're working in. You can do structural engineering, construction, transportation, and so on. And for all of these exams, it's a national exam that's used by states all around the country, but each state sets their own standards for what the passing level is. There's a certain amount of reciprocity, but it's not automatic from state to state. And there's lists of what's covered in these things. And that brings us to why it's relevant for this bill, because there is a very clearly defined scope of practice for each licensure that a person would get. And in addition, we operate under some rules of professional conduct, and you are specifically forbidden to put yourself out as being qualified in a field you're not qualified for. And I actually used that at one point on a project when it was getting into an area that I was not my area, and begged off it, you know, on the basis that it wasn't something I was qualified for. And an engineer can lose their license if they violate these rules of conduct. So if they were to put themselves out as being qualified to do a particular job and they were not, a complaint could be filed against them and they could lose that professional engineering license. And if they're in some consulting field, that would mean they lose their work until they get it back. And so that's kind of the overview. I brought some level of detail, but I didn't want to exhaust your time here with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Urusso, for thinking of us. With that, we have a couple members on the list. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative O'Neill and Representative Urusso. Just sort of a commentary. I married an engineer, and she's spent this whole time trying to get my life in order, and she's failed to this point, but she tries. But the test that you first referenced was the EIT test for the engineer in training, and that was fairly arduous and created creative language in my home when she was taking that, and then had to go on to take the PE test. Lots of time, lots of energy, lots of studying, lots of effort, and lots of mentoring under a professional engineer, which I wanted to make sure that we got on the record, because when she became a PE, she had to have gone under that mentoring system that you referenced under another professional engineer. So I guess my point is that I support this bill because it is very difficult to become a PE, and it is sort of the zenith of your professional career, and you have gone under a tremendous amount of scrutiny. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Yaruso.
To that point, I have a PhD in chemical engineering. I had to get 3 years of the supervised practice after the PhD. So it is, as you say, it's a very high level of standard.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, yes, you don't find these in cereal boxes, so it is very difficult to get.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative O'Neill and Representative Yaruso, I think I can get my head around this and I can understand why this makes some sense in doing this. The concern I have, and Representative Yaruso mentioned, the scope of practice, and it may be in your licensing part of that, and again, you may be, as you said, that if you practice in something that's not in your scope of practice, that you could lose your license or lose your certification. But there's nothing that I see here in the bill that says that. And so if somebody out there, general public, hires somebody or has somebody come and say, well, this is what you got to do, but they don't know whether it's in your scope of practice or not. And there's nothing in the law, if they look at it, that says that. I guess I would be more inclined to say, yes, this is okay. If there was something, and I don't know, I'm not the best wordsmith here where to put this, but something in here, they're talking about this, that if mentions that scope of practice in there, so as they go forward, so saying that if they have this in their scope of practices and this is what they're doing, they don't have to get the additional certifications. But as you said, a structural engineer that's building buildings and designing those type of things, to do a water treatment stuff, that design a septic system that may or may not comply with pollution control agencies' requirements might be outside of their scope of practice, and I, as an individual hiring them, may not know that and rely on their information. And like I said, that's a concern I have. I mean, I don't, the idea of reducing overlapping and continuing conflicting standards from different groups that you already have this, I can understand that it would make the government work a little bit better. But again, we have to look out for what's the safety and health of the people in our state. So I guess that's my concern, and it's more of a statement than a question. And I don't know if going forward, if you would look at that to put that in so that it's spelled out that within their scope of practice, so that a structural engineer isn't saying, well, I don't have to abide by the PCA and I can design this because I'm a professional engineer.
Representative O'Neill, to that point.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Nelson. I appreciate your concern. First of all, we're not changing current statute in that manner. So that what is there, which is what Representative Yaruso alluded to, stays. We're not changing that. And I would also point to lines 2.3 of the amendment, which basically says it addresses exactly your concern. And so it refers back to that statute. So it has been crafted there, and it does say a person licensed as a professional engineer under these sections, and so that refers back to the concerns that you have, shall only be required to obtain a license, certification, or other form of approval for skill or services in addition to professional licenses if there's a determination. But it refers back to that original statute that talks about exactly our concern. I do have a couple of professional engineers here, too, if you'd like to hear from them as well, and I'm one of the lobbyists for them, if you like.
Representative Nelson, a follow-up?
A follow-up, and the other concern I have, and see, there's an A4 amendment to deal with that, but is the rulemaking process, our cities and counties that may be in the process of propagating ordinances, that if this were passed and went to the floor and got passed next week, they would, the day following enactment, it would take effect right then, and there may be people that don't follow the legislature as closely as we think they do, and may be passing ordinances without knowing this, and so I would support the A4 amendment when that gets brought up for that reason. So that's my comments.
Okay, thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Representative Nelson's question, so on line 2.2 of the bill, it says the words perform any actions authorized under the professional engineering license, and then it refers back to the statute. So you gave the example of sewer, and this is one of the reasons why the civil engineering licensure is broken down into specific categories, because civil engineering is a very broad area, and you would have had to have been working in that specific area to get that specific licensure. So a person who does structural engineering would not have the license to do sewers. In chemical engineering, you know, we only have the one license, but we're not licensed to do sewers either. So a lot of that concern is covered already under what's established for each of those licensures.
Thank you, Representative Russo. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would actually like to move the A4 amendment, since it was brought forward.
Representative Halverson, to your amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And because the and this is a small change, but the effective date currently of this legislation, which I think is very smart. I think that streamlining these services, giving professional service professional engineers the service and education that they provide. That their education provides is extremely important, and I think that making it letting them live up to their professional expectations as opposed to adding one more layer of government seems to make a lot of sense. However, because this bill will impact policies with governments throughout the state, or even expectations with governments throughout the state, I'd hate to have this go into effect and somebody, you know, is expecting a certification on a project that no longer requires one, isn't aware, because they don't get to spend all their days up here like we do. And so I just wanted to provide some kind of communication time for everybody to get onboarded with the new policies, make any changes that they might need to make, and at the very least have everybody have an understanding of what the new expectations will be going forward, so the transition for our professional engineers can be very smooth.
Representative Halverson has moved the A4 amendment. To the A4 amendment, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Halverson, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I really do. And, you know, we've been talking to all 10 state agencies that this directly affects, and the cities, primarily the agencies, for the past 2 years. And we've talked about every single word in the bill at great length. They have not considered that as an issue for them. The cities also have weighed in, and they don't consider that an issue. But if the committee feels that a little bit more time would be needed, I would be amenable to possibly making a friendly amendment to your amendment, if that's possible. If we could change it maybe to August as opposed to January. And my concern is that, you know, they've been seeking relief. The engineers have been seeking relief for quite some time. This has been a two-year-long process. And their fear is that if we don't have a little bit sooner enactment, that the agencies will continue to require additional certifications and additional pieces for them. So, you know, if we could strike a balance, I would be amenable to that.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. I would be very happy with an August 1st date. I think that, I mean, January was a date to start our conversation, but I'd be very willing to take that as a friendly amendment, and I can move an oral amendment, or I can move for an incorporation of different language.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Halverson has incorporated August 1st, 2015 into her amendment. To the A4 amendment, which now has an enactment date of August 1st, 2015. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe this is a point at which the professional testifiers that you have here might be able to shed some light on just, you know, the situation and how this changes it.
Thank you, Representative Runbeck. Sure, welcome to the committee, sir. If you would introduce yourself, let us know who you represent, and proceed briefly with testimony.
Mr. Chair, my name is Brian Malm, and I'm here representing the Minnesota Society of Professional Engineers. We're an organization of over 1,000 members. And actually, my testimony has been nearly completely covered by the discussion that's taken place already, and I really wouldn't have much to add unless there are questions for me.
Thank you, sir.
The effective date change, we're
go ahead.
Amenable to that change.
Okay. Any other discussion to the A4? Representative Albright.
Mr. Chair, my questions are to the bill.
Seeing no further discussion on the A4, which is now an enactment date of August 1st, 2015, all in favor of the A4 signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Seeing none, the A4 amendment is adopted. To the bill, Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I forget the testifier's name again.
Brian Malm.
Mr. Malm. Can you just elaborate for the committee, once you receive your designation, you obviously are subordinate to the overall committee or organization that endows you with that designation. So what level of continuing education or enforcement to your actions as an individual do they follow you or supervise you, and how would that be conveyed to a municipality if you were offering your services? How would they know that you're in good standing with your overall organization? How would they be able to verify that?
Mr. Malm.
Mr. Chair, member, we're licensed through the Board of Architecture Engineering. We call it the Alphabet Board, AELSLAGID. Affectionately, we call it the Alphabet Board. But they have a website. Our licenses are posted on the website, so any licensed engineer can be verified that their license is current on that website. Our licenses are active for 2 years. During that two-year period, we're required to obtain 24 hours of continuing education. Two of those hours now are required to be in ethics. And so when we renew our license, we're required to verify that we've obtained that continuing education for that licensure period and pay our licensure fee, and then our license is updated.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And how often does the organization receive inquiries about engineers in terms of validation that they're current on their license?
Mr. Malm.
I don't know that I could speak to that. Doreen Frost is the executive director of the board, is here in the office, but
looks like Representative Urusso has a good answer for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Albright, that's that information is also publicly posted on the board's website, and it's a common, it's not high in number compared to the numbers of people that are licensed. But they regularly deal with complaints and regularly discipline people. A lot of the complaints are actually people that have held themselves out as being licensed that are not, and they've been issued kind of cease and desist orders. We took care of that to a small extent last year when we put in a stipulation in statute that no one is allowed to call themselves a professional engineer unless they actually hold the license or even put the, you know, PE on their cards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe we'll try to wrap up any outstanding question marks that members may have. Representative Urusso, or excuse me, Representatives Joachim and Representatives Nash and myself have all had extensive backgrounds in hiring and interviewing in our communities when we held local office in dealing with this. I can tell you one of the most difficult contracts to render on behalf of a community is that of an engineering contract because they're organized quite a bit like a law firm or like a medical practice where you have different specializations within those offices because as a municipality you'll come across a lot of different things, construction of road projects, construction of bike paths, construction of water treatment facilities, construction of water towers. The list goes on and on and on. And in my 14 years of dealing with, or should say 10 years of dealing with this at the local level, engineers will quickly back away and tell you, not qualified for this, you're going to have to go out and hire somebody else, which is at the angst of the local officials and saying, why did we hire you? That's what we thought we were getting. But they're very quick to dismiss themselves from further conversation or construction on that. Projects that go underway right now that would be started today, that were approved by a city council last night for engineering work, most likely wouldn't be going into the ground until way late in the fall or early next spring. So there's ample opportunity to be able to vet these kinds of things out. So if there are questions and concerns that members have about would a city not know this, would they not be able to get qualified staff or would there be a shift, I hold out to you that their systems are very self-policing. It's also a very competitive business because most smaller communities can't afford to have on staff an engineer. So their competition tends to keep them honest as well because they do shop and say, hey, are you happy with your services? Because here's what we can do in a kind of a free market. And maybe that helps to provide some clarification for members as you move to the vote, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Seeing no further members on the list, any final discussion to House File 288 as amended? Seeing none, we will move to a vote. I will renew my motion that House File 288 be referred to the Jobs, Growth, Energy, Affordability, and Policy Finance Committee as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? House File 288 is on its way to Jobs. Thank you, Representative O'Neill, Representative Urusso. Next on the agenda, House File 794. Representative O'Driscoll, this must be a good one. We've got great bipartisan co-authors here, Representative Nelson and Representative Drazkowski. This must not be a labor bill.
Mr. Chair, very observant. Very, very observant.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
It's one we've snuck in that's a labor bill. On Drazkowski.
Seeing no amendments. Well, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to be with us. I'd like to move before the committee House File 794 and have it be re-referred after today's discussion to the Committee on Jobs.
To your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Today I present to the committee for their consideration a technical correction bill that deals with land surveying here in the state of Minnesota. We have two organizations that deal with surveyors and membership organizations. One is the Minnesota Society of Professional Surveyors, and the other is the Minnesota Association of County Surveyors. Very basically, they break down on publicly employed versus privately employed. Again, not completely. They have been working for a period of time to resolve some issues that deal with the recordation of plat maps, recordation of other documents, and memorializing of records to help people to be able to obtain and maintain the legal description of their property. With the changes in technology that we've been experiencing and some of the automations, it becomes important that we modify some of the things in statute for how things are done. As someone who's been involved in the real estate business and been involved in land development, I can tell you that you scratch your head and say, why do we have to have plastic, what are oftentimes referred to as hard shells, recorded at the county recorder? And who cares about how thick those are? Well, that's a big thing. Statute drives those kinds of things. These are the things that you're going to see in the bill. Placement of certain verbiage on a plat map. also memorializing of monument, cross-referencing of monuments, which are used to be able to be pinging points to be able to define the beginning of properties and to bring about the boundaries and shapes of those parcels of land. And so today, to provide very brief testimony for the committee and backgrounding on the work that has been done between these two associations, I'm joined by Mr. Michael Welling and Ms. Lisa Hanning, and they would like to make some comments, if you could, Mr. Chair, to the committee.
Sure thing. Welcome both of you to the committee. If you would, just let us know who you are for the record, who you represent, and then you can proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my name is Michael Welling, and I'm the Washington County Surveyor, and I'm here representing the Joint Committee of Minnesota Association of County Surveyors and the Minnesota Society of Professional Surveyors. We formed a joint committee to work on these statute revisions. And for the most part, what we have here is housekeeping items. There's some items that have been on the radar screens of both organizations for a few years. And we have checked with all our stakeholders and run it past the State Bar and the Recorders Association. And we've got input from them, and everybody's behind it. Basically, what we have is just some minor issues. We had a couple of statutes that there was multiple cross references between statutes, and there was some inconsistent language. And what we're doing is we're streamlining those and eliminating some of the cross references, clarifying some things. As Representative O'Driscoll stated, there's some issues with the technology, and I've brought some examples of some of these Mylar plats if anybody wanted to look at them to see some of the issues that we're dealing with. Other than that, in the interest of brevity, I'll stop there and pass it over to Lisa and leave it up to questions.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, representatives. I am Lisa Haney. I'm a county surveyor for two counties in Minnesota, and I'm also here representing the joint committee between the county surveyors and the private surveyors. And we're here to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Thank you both for being here today. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you said that the real property section of the Bar Association, the County Recorders Association, both are in favor of this. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Thank you.
Representative Joachim.
Just a quick clarifying question. Wondering, in Subdivision 7, you mentioned a contradiction between two state statutes. Can you just briefly describe that contradiction and what you're getting rid of?
Mr. Welling or Ms. Haney?
Mr. Chair, Representative, was that 505.021 Subdivision 7? That's the one? Okay. Back in 2007, there was a previous round of revisions to that statute, and there was some language that was inserted specifying. It was the language that stated what the county surveyor is certifying to when he or she reviews and approves a subdivision plat. County surveyor has to review it before it can be recorded, and then lots can be sold. And there was the wording that was in there was not exactly what was intended. So it implied that the county surveyor was certifying that the entire statute was complied with, and that is actually the responsibility of the surveyor who was preparing the plat. It's the private practice surveyor who's actually preparing the plats who's certified to that. When the county surveyor reviews and approves, they are certifying to the fact that the process was followed and that it was approved per the statute, not that they necessarily prepared the plat or that they are certifying to every detail on the plat. So if that makes sense, that's what we're clarifying with that language.
Any other member questions? Any final discussion to the bill? Representative O'Driscoll, we give you the closing comments, and then feel free to renew your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank Representatives Nelson and Pugh, who are on this committee, who signed on to the bill. It's a good bill, vote yes, and I renew my motion to re-refer the bill today to the Committee on Jobs. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative O'Driscoll renews his motion. All in favor of House File 794, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? House File 794 is referred to the Committee on Jobs. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you for your time.
Next on the agenda, House File 495. Representative Howe, welcome to the committee. I will make a motion that House File 495 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Go ahead and proceed with your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This House File 495, basically what it does is give the counties the same option we currently provide for schools and cities to have a local CPA or a CPA firm come in and do their audit and have it accepted by the state auditor. So it just allows the counties now, it would allow the counties to do the same option that cities and school districts currently have. It's a cost-saving measure, and I do believe that if we allow the school districts and the cities to do it, I do believe that we should use that cost-saving measure and allow the counties the same option. Now, I do have two testifiers with me today. If you'd prefer to hear their testimony first before we move.
Sure, let's do that, please. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
If you would, please just introduce yourself for the record and let us know who you represent, and we look forward to your testimony.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Satterbach, and I'm the actual auditor of Swift County, and I've been there for 2 years. Previously to that, I was a CPA as part of a public accounting firm, and thank you for allowing me this time. The county of Swift is located in west central part of the state and consists of 21 townships in 8 cities. Swift County is considered agriculturally...
Can we have you move into the mic just a little bit, so thank you.
Okay, sorry.
No, you're fine.
Agriculture makes up more than 75% of our taxable market value. Over the last 10 years, the amount of county public aid we've received at Swift County has been reduced from $933,000 to $196,000. Because of this, we have concerns regarding our concentration of revenue streams for the upcoming years. This is the revenue that we need to pay for the services that we provide for our county. As our government support decreases, the expenses to run our county continue to increase. Over the last 10 years, to cover these expenses, we have almost doubled our levy from $5 million in 2006 to $9.3 million in 2015. This forces Swift County to spend our limited funds wisely. When comparing the tax impact on the residents and industry in Swift County with our 7 surrounding counties, we fall right in the middle. Our goal is to be good stewards of our county revenue and reduce expenses whenever possible. We try to achieve the best value for our services we give to our residents. We also use the same rationale when we purchase services for the county. Swift County has used the services of an independent accounting firm since 2005 for 2 reasons. The first and main reason for requesting a change to use a public accounting firm was the length of time it was taking to receive a completed audit. The annual audit is used as a vital management tool in our county. This audit also gives our Board of Commissioners and residents assurance that we have followed all of the necessary regulations and requirements in preparing our financial information. Due to this long delay in receiving our audit information, we felt that there was very little value left at the time the report was completed. Our audits are currently being presented within 8 months after the close of the prior year. To our county, this represents a good value. We also continue to have good and timely communications with our auditors before, during, and after the audit. The audit firm we currently use hosts seminars and roundtable discussions throughout the year. This allows us to keep up to date with our continuously changing financial environment. The second reason was cost. This was not a major factor initially, but has become a significant budgeting concern now. In discussions with other counties regarding their audit fees, we have found that Swift County pays about half the amount currently being paid by the other counties to the state auditor's office. If we were to use the state auditor's services next year, I would have had to increase my budget by an additional $30,000 to $40,000. Allowing us to bid out for these services forces the public accounting firms to be competitive with their prices and their services. We continue to receive very few insignificant findings from the desktop review done annually by the Office of the State Auditor. To us, this is a good indicator of the quality of work we are receiving, and we look forward to working with our public accounting firm in the future and the value that we receive from them. Thank you for your time.
Good morning. I'm Carolyn Homestead, and I am the finance director, which encompasses the role of the county auditor for Goodhue County. I've been there for 8 years, and we are not like Swift County because we are one of those counties that is performed by the Office of the State Auditor. The statute indicates that if you want to be released, you have to do a formal request to the State Auditor's Office. We've done this 3 times over in the last few years and been denied each time. The response is, and I quote, "We review county audit assignments every 3 years." So they're preparing their budget for a 3-year time period, but don't give us the opportunity to do likewise. And so we've been denied in that sense. As she indicates, there are 4 major areas that we're looking at, cost being one. Our audit last year cost us $62,000. There have been informal surveys over the last few years from other counties, and anywhere from $25,000 to $70,000, excluding Ramsey and Hennepin and those large counties. Consistency, as Representative Howe said, why should the cities and the cities of the first class since 2009 and the school districts be able to allow to have a private firm do their audit and the counties cannot? In the past, we've heard reasons like, well, you have a lot more federal money coming in, and we want to make sure that that is reported correctly. Anybody that does an audit, I'm a former CPA, I have, like the engineering, let my license go, but I've done a lot of that work. You have the standards you have to follow. So whether you're a private firm or the Office of the State Auditor, you're all working by the same rules. The report has to look the same. It has to have the same categories. It has to have the management and analysis in it. So what's the difference? And then also, when you go through this request process, the Office of the State Auditor has released counties. Is it due to geographic reasons? Is it due to other reasons? There are essentially 3 or 4 firms in the state that do a lot of these county audits. One of them is made up of people in northern Minnesota who formerly worked for the Office of the State Auditor. Those offices were closed, so they went and formed their own firm, and now we're doing the audits in some of those northern counties. What's the difference? You know, if you have a professional, and we just went through that whole discussion on professional licensure for the engineers, but you have CPAs with licenses, you have doctors, you have attorneys, do you have to be told if you want to change from one auditor or doctor or something to go to another firm that you have to get permission from them to make that change? You might feel that the work is going to be the same. There's a comfort level with the people, and maybe the cost is different. This is the kind of thing we're looking for. We're looking for cost. We're looking for consistency that the school districts and the other cities have. Timeliness was addressed. The audit firm and the counties have to work together, and we all have crazy schedules, so sometimes those schedules don't jive as nicely as we would like them to. But everybody wants a spring audit, and everybody wants their field work done at the same time, and that just doesn't work when the Office of the State Auditor only has so many firms. They also don't seem to, I mean, whatever their staffing level is, and that would create more budget for the state and all those kind of things. We've got the competition. We have the private firms out there, and they are doing more than just county audits or more than just the type of thing that the Office of the State Auditor does. So that gives them that 12-year work year, where maybe the Office of the State Auditor doesn't have the opportunity to do that. So there's a backlog when the review process hits St. Paul. As she said, the field work can be done in spring, and then by the time that audit comes and it waits for the review process in the Twin Cities, and we were one of those that had to wait a number of months last year, the audit comes, it's due by the end of September, and you're sort of in that frenzy about when is it going to come, when is it going to come, is it going to meet the deadline? And they push, and they normally do meet that. But it's a concern from those of us that are working and wanting that reliable information. It's sort of embarrassing when you bring your audit to the board in October. You know, that's sort of like, what are we doing wrong on our end? And we don't think we're doing anything wrong, but it's all the scheduling of the Office of the State Auditor. And quality is the other thing I want to address, and I think we have addressed it. Both both parties, being the Office of State Auditor and any private firm, has to follow those same generally accepted accounting standards and auditing standards that are controlled by the Comptroller of the United States. So it's not like they aren't capable. And the Office of the State Auditor does release people. So it's not like every firm out there isn't capable. You have to trust the people in the county and the county boards to want a licensed person. Like I said, there are four major firms in the state that are doing this, so not every Tom, Dick, and Harry accounting firm that maybe focuses on income taxes is going to be qualified to do the audit. But that's our professional responsibility as the auditors as well. I've been in front of a number of committees, and I don't know how many of you are aware of this, but in 2011, a similar bill was passed. The House passed it, the Senate passed it, and then in the summer during the special session, Governor Dayton vetoed it. So this isn't a new topic. It has had the support of both parties in both houses, and I don't quite know what will happen if it passes this time. I'm concerned. I'm concerned that the governor will again say, sorry, you know, it's everybody else agrees with it and thinks it's fine, but he would put a veto to it. So it has nothing to do with the personalities of the staff. It has nothing to do with working with the staff. It has to do with cost, quality, timeliness, and consistency. And that's why we're looking for your support to move forward with House File 495. And I'll certainly answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony. With that, Representative Nelson, you're on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Howe, having run my local union and having every year having to get an audit for the federal government, I understand a little bit about what's going on here. But my concern is when I look at the bill and the existing law, the language seems a little clunky. And now adding the, starting on 212, line 212, the language notwithstanding paragraph A. What part of paragraph A do you not want to withstand from? Because if I read this, and if this bill passes and gets signed into law, that by having the audit done by somebody other than the state auditor, they can ignore all of paragraph A, which includes requiring a copy of the report be filed for public inspection, being allowed the state auditor to accept the audits. Department of Human Service piece of it with having to do with the social welfare funds. There's a couple other things. The county require that the CPA firm disclose any evidence of malfeasance that they've discovered in the course of their audit. Require that the county attorney institute civil criminal proceedings. So if this passes and say the auditor finds malfeasance and reports it to the county auditor, and the county auditor can say, well, this is notwithstanding that, I don't have to do anything about it. Those are concerns that I have, that possibly instead of doing it the language the way it is, that maybe there's a better way to fix the whole statutes, tighten the whole thing up instead of adding this notwithstanding part. Because it basically says we can ignore all of paragraph A, the existing law, and by doing this audit. So I guess, Representative Howe, maybe you have an answer to that question.
Representative Howe, answer if you have one, and we'll see if Mr. Shepard can help us with that as well.
I think Mr. Shepard could probably answer better than I, but when I read that, I thought it just pertained to the piece where the auditor may accept it. This basically says that you shall accept it, and that's where I took the part that notwithstanding paragraph A. But maybe Mr. Shepard's got a better answer for that.
Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair and members, I think when I read notwithstanding provisions, I think they're typically interpreted in light of what comes after that. So I think in this case, what this likely means is that notwithstanding anything in paragraph A that would not allow a county to go hire its own CPA firm, this sentence does that. So I don't read it as overriding the entire paragraph A, but just those portions that are inconsistent with the county providing for an audit to be performed by a CPA firm.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Representative Nelson.
So, Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Shepard can enlighten me then why later on in this paragraph C are we repeating parts of paragraph A if we're not going to not withstand paragraph A? And I guess to me it reads hard, and maybe it, you know, that the idea of doing it may not be a bad idea. It's just maybe we want to have our statutes precise, and maybe we can do this by taking words out, as former Representative Biskins used to say, take words out of the statutes and make the book smaller. Maybe we could do this write this in a better way that clarifies the whole section.
Representative Howe, any comments to that, or Mr. Shepard?
Mr. Chair, I would agree with Representative Nelson that the existing statute is old and not written in a very direct way, and it probably could be written better at some point. But in helping Representative Howe to draft this bill, I didn't want to take on rewriting the existing law, so I didn't do that.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Nelson.
And I guess, like, if we're going to be fixing part of it, maybe, you know, I would say now would be a good time to look at making the whole thing read better, so that we don't have any, and as part of this, and so that we don't have this people looking at it and being confused. Like I said, it's just the whole language, and then is clunky, and then putting this on, I think, makes it clunkier, is the best way I can describe it.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Howe.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, I guess I would. I'm not opposed to going back and making an amendment to clean that up. But at the present time, I do think it works, because everybody understands the first part. That those that work in the industry understand it, and I think everybody that works in the industry would understand C. But I'm not opposed to going back before we hit the next committee to see if we can amend it to make it cleaner and read better for you. I mean, that's definitely a possibility. I'm not opposed to doing that.
Representative Nelson, are you on State Government Finance?
Yes, I are.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess the other question I have for you is from you, Mr. Chair, is the path we're going to, I know it's going to, I guess you're alluding that it's going to end up in State Government Finance, because looking at this, if all the counties in the state move their business away from the state auditor, that's going to be a huge hit on their funding for that department. And right now, they currently, I don't believe, get much funding from us as a state. And if they have duties that they have to do, and they're not getting it from the fees, those fees are going to have to go up to the remaining counties, or we're going to have to kick in general fund dollars. So I'm hoping that it's going to end up in State Government Finance, because this will have an impact one way or the other on their budget.
Yes, Representative Nelson, this is going to State Government Finance, and that will be the motion on the bill. I guess, Representative Nelson, the question I would have for you is, are you willing to work with Representative Howe on perhaps some cleanup language for this section before State Government Finance? I would say if it's cleanup language, the committee has dealt with that and would not need to come back here. If it's purely cleanup language, making it more concise and more readable, as you stated. If that's the case, are you willing to work with Representative Howe in the meantime before State Government Finance?
Mr. Chair, I think I would be willing to. I think with Mr. Shepard, I think if we can look at this and try and clean the bill, the language up of the whole statute, by passing a bill that does what the Representative Howe wants to do, it might be better for us all, that, you know, kill two birds with one stone.
I appreciate that. That sounds good to me. We'll move on next on the list. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that most of my questions have been answered or will be answered as this moves forward. I appreciate Representative Howe's willingness to work on this. I found a lot of confusion, too, and I think being very clear about legislative intent, well, you've got the opportunity to do something, you know, be a better author than whoever wrote this the first time, right? But I think that, you know, being very clear about legislative intent, about what we expect about examinations, particularly when I read the piece about disclosing malfeasance, that they find there's actually an order to report it directly to the county, and it sounds like that's the intent, that you would continue that practice. However, this does not make that particularly clear, and I think that in particular should be very clear. So thank you.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we all would agree bipartisanly that the Office of the Legislative Auditor, Jim Nobles, is a nonpartisan, trustworthy, respected across the board. There isn't anyone who doesn't respect his work, and he operates in a nonpartisan a manner to audit the operation of anything in state government that we ask him to do. In this case, we have an actual audit, financial audit, done by a person in government, the state auditor, for that same purpose of making sure that the local governments, in this case the counties, are operating in a manner that taxpayers' money going to them is being used wisely. And as an independent audit of the situation, I would hope that we would not neglect the fact that we want taxpayer dollars to be audited with independent oversight in a manner that is consistent across all counties, so that, and then we get the public data back so we can see across counties what's going on with taxpayer dollars. This is an important function. The more we move it out into firms that are for profit, and hence they have the want to please the one that is hiring them to some extent. I'm going to say still that they're operating as good auditors, but there is this element there. I don't want to let go of the fact that we need this strong independent oversight of our tax dollars by the state auditor.
Ms. Holmstein.
Thank you, Chairman. To address your concern, Mrs. Lane, the state auditor's office still gets every audit, and they still review every audit, and so there's a fee charged, a minimal one, but the actual work of the audit is not performed. The other question is, why are some counties able to have an independent private firm perform the audit, and some counties are not? If it were all or nothing, but it's not that way. I mean, they closed their offices with whatever their reasoning was in the last 10 or 15 years. And if you look at how many offices there are in northern Minnesota, they just decide it wasn't an area they wanted to travel or not. That's a concern that I have. Why are some allowed and some aren't at the pure discretion? And it's like, okay, well, you know, 3 years, we have our schedule. We will look at it 3 years from now again. That, as a taxpayer, with my taxpayer dollars going out to pay for this audit, it's a real concern of mine.
Representative Howe.
Well, thank you. And I would venture to say that I would like to see the state auditor do more of those reviews and more of the audits of the audits, because I really have an issue with I don't believe that sometimes that gets done to the level that we'd like, because they get pressured to get these other audits done and back out. So I think that it would free them up to do a better job on some of the audit of the audits or the review of the audits, and I think that would allow us some flexibility there to get things done that right now I don't know if they get the emphasis that they need.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question is for Ms. Haney, is it?
Holmstead.
Oh, Holmstead.
That's okay.
So sorry. It's with regard to the audits of the audits and the fees. And I'm just wondering if you have any idea, you know, approximately what that fee is. Is it dependent upon the size of the county?
The review of the review.
The review of the review, yes.
If I recall, it's like $600 or something like that. So $600 compared to paying, in our case, the $66,000. So maybe I could get by with $50,000 and pay $600 to the state. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ms. Holmstein. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I wanted to speak to the issue regarding a private auditing firm not delivering the same complexity or the same thoroughness. Having served as a mayor, we had an outside audit agency, and they didn't always deliver the news that we wanted them to deliver. And it was very thorough. It was very accurate. They weren't beholden to those of us writing a check. They are an outside entity that has a reputation to maintain, and they were very, very thorough. So I just wanted to make sure that we didn't say that the private enterprise or the private companies doing these audits were not thorough in their work, because they're exceptionally thorough.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I've got the A1 amendment. I'd like to move the A1 amendment right at this time.
Okay, Representative Nelson moves the A1.
And even though it starts with the notwithstanding part here, but...
I was just going to say.
I think I'd bring it up first. This has to do with... We've had in state government finance an issue about trade secrets information that stuff couldn't come out, and I just want to make sure that we... That the audits that they're being performed by the auditing firms, that information becomes public information where it's necessary, so that the public can look at it, the county residents, the taxpayers can look at it, so that we don't, you know, basically for better transparency. I hate that word, but better transparency in government. Representative Hall, I would hope that you would accept the amendment.
Representative Nelson, I have a couple questions first on this amendment. I think your idea is a good idea, and I think that, well, here's my question. What you have listed here in your A1 amendment, is that the same threshold, the exact threshold that the current state auditor, the data that they have to release, or is this going above, is this going beyond? My question is this the same scope that the auditor is going through?
I'm being phone a friend here. I'm being told that all data that the state auditor has is public information, so everything they do is public information.
So, Representative Nelson, my question in line of what we were discussing earlier, would it perhaps be better to have either reference the statute where it just says all data that they have is public data? I'm curious here. There's some really specific things listed out here, so I'm just curious if this is the language that we currently need to say that the data they have is public data, or if we need to say, I don't know, what I'm trying to figure out is exactly how complex is the data privacy that the state auditor has and uses, and are we putting in the statute the exact same language with this amendment? Because if that's the case, I think this is a good amendment, but I want to make sure that we're apples to apples here. And then, Representative Howe, it's your bill. You can certainly speak to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question would go, is this different than we currently apply to schools and cities that currently have this practice? And I would like to see us be consistent throughout that practice and not be different in the county piece than we do on the cities and the school districts. So I would venture to say if we work on this bill, I would prefer not to take the amendment and look at adding something that fixes all of that piece in the order of transparency, instead of tacking this on here and not having a good reference as to if the school districts and the cities are currently under the same requirement.
Representative Nelson.
Mr. Speaker, or Mr. Chair.
It's good on some days, not so good on others.
Yeah, and in the previous committee, the chair kept calling everybody senator, and so I was wondering when we all got demoted. But right now, I believe this is what the standard that the state auditor is up to. At these other ones, fixing them might be a different part. I'm not sure whether they're identical across the board for school districts and cities that perform their own public audit, have public auditors do it instead of the state auditor. But I just want to make sure we have, like I said, because of what has happened in a couple of questioning of basically the Hayes audit, that the Hayes report that we had earlier, that information couldn't be because of private data and that couldn't be released to us, that I want to make sure that these audits, the public can look at them, because if we're here to try and make sure that the public knows what the counties are spending on, that and they're asking to get this changed so that they can do these like the other ones do, that we want to make sure that the information is public. and not be hiding behind something that says, no, this is secret trade information that I can't get out to you.
Representative Howe, we'll kind of let you make the decision on this, and I would say to Representative Nelson as well, I think the intention behind your amendment is right, and I think we should move in this direction. I don't know if this is the exact language, and this would also mean that the bill would have to go to civil law, which is where this discussion should take place. So I will say this. I mean, Representative Howe, if you want to, you can add the language at this time, or you can work on language with Representative Nelson, Mr. Shepard, before your state government finance. Either way, I hope some language like this gets put on and then would go to civil law after that. And Representative Scott would like to speak.
Yeah. Just to this point, I'm just wondering if Mr. Shepard can tell us what the schools that have this ability to do that, how if this language measures up and lines up with that, maybe we can get the answer here before we have to make that decision, if he might know or have the ability to look up the language. He doesn't know.
Mr. Shepard will do some additional research on that, but is not prepared at this time to give us an answer to that. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a former school board member for 8 years, our audits are public information, but individuals are protected. It's an audit, but it's very detailed, and it's 120-some pages long generally, and it's all public. It's posted on our website.
Thank you, Representative Seltzer. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a question regarding the use of the words trade secret. I believe in the transparency of the data, and I want to make sure that everyone has access to the data, but as somebody who owns a company that creates resulting data using perhaps things that we've developed internally, disclosing those to the public, does that put these accounting firms at a disadvantage? And I want to make sure that, I was talking with Mr. Shepard, I want to make sure that we're not putting someone's methodologies out for their competitors to be able to get access to. So I would like to clarify that language, because that particularly troubles me as a business owner myself. What's that? That's to the amendment, yes, sir.
Representative Nelson, do you have any background on that?
I don't believe that it would, but again, that's something that I'd like to see the amendment go on here and then work with the author to try and hash these things out. But with in the accounting firms, I don't know if the trade secrets are the same as in computer firms. I mean, the audits are audits. Like I said, my experience with the audit, I've had to go through an audit every year with our local unions that they have to do that, and it's basically this, you know, set things up and look at the books and look at the things, and they're kind of prescribed how they have to do it. So I don't know if there's as many trade secrets in audit firms as there would be in other businesses.
Representative Howe or one of your testifiers, who would like to? Anyone know? Representative Howe, any comments to that?
Mr. Chair, I guess when I look at this, I'm a little concerned that currently the state auditors, from my understanding, information, it's just the final report that's public, not all of the work data. And that's my concern, is that I don't believe that all of that data is public. And so I would, and I don't know, but I question the fact that all that data is public.
And
Representative Nelson, Representative Howe, why don't we let Mr. Shepard briefly give us his understanding of what's public, what's not public, from the state auditor. And then from there, this discussion is a little bit beyond our scope and our purview, although the intent behind the amendment is good government. But Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, the statute that governs the classification of state auditor data is 6.715, and I'll just do a very brief synopsis of it. The data, as Representative Nelson indicated, the general rule is that data are public. But state auditor data related to an auditor, they're not public until the final report has been issued. Once the final report has been issued, then there's a couple of things that are still made private, and that is data that the auditor reasonably believes could result in litigation. Those stay protected until the litigation is completed or no longer being pursued, and data on individuals that could reasonably be used to determine the identity of the individual are private if the auditor believes the individual would not have provided that data without the assurance that it would remain private. So that's the law that governs the state auditor.
Thank you, Mr. Shepard. Representative Howell.
Mr. Chair, and what I would like to do is, if Representative Nelson would be amenable to this, is when we work on the other verbiage in this bill, is to turn around and work that language that puts that same section, and we can just reference that, and they can be accountable to those standards. I think that would be a doable deal, and I think it would clean it up.
Representative Albright, and then we'll go to you, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think in the conversation that I've listened to from Representative Holland, Representative Nelson, and from Mr. Shepard, I think what you're describing is gap accounting, which is generally accepted accounting principles. And for the sake of brevity, I won't go into the alliteration on that. But
thank you.
What? Thank you, Mr. Chair. What Mr. Shepard remarks on is exactly what gap accounting promulgates in terms of the oath of confidentiality, the privacy of the individual preparing the documentation. Where there is a material effect on the outcome of the audit, it must be disclosed. And so to the extent that we're requiring a generally accepted or gap accounting on behalf of the state auditor, it's also, because of their designation as a CPA, as in that charter, it requires them and obligates them to a code of ethics as well as a gap accounting principle. So it is aligned directly with what the state auditor would provide, and what I believe Representative Howe is asking for is a broader brush from the state auditor to complete more reviews as opposed to the work on behalf of the counties, where you can interject a bit of competitive nature because of the, I don't want to denigrate it, but the commoditization of the audit function itself, which can be performed very ably by these CPA firms and then brought forward to a state auditor for final review.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Excellent insight. Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chair, I would feel comfortable at this point, even though once it leaves here, it won't be in our possession anymore, and I believe we should be doing our work in committee and not passing it on and saying, well, getting assurances in the future, we're going to do it. I don't feel comfortable doing that, but in this case, I'm willing to work with Representative Howe and Mr. Shepard and try and get this language right before it gets to the next committee and moving forward. So at this point, I will be willing to withdraw my amendment with the commitment from Representative Howe that we will try and get this fixed right. And I guess the other question I'd have here, did we contact the excuse me, the auditor's office? And is somebody here from the auditor's office to speak on this bill, for or against?
Thank you, Representative Nelson. First things first, Representative Howe, Representative Nelson asked for your commitment. So just on the record, wondering your commitment level to working with him.
Absolutely. We can work towards that and incorporate that.
Thank you, Representative Howe. And again, to that point, if we're cleaning up language in the statute, not substantively changing statute, we've had the discussion here and would not need to see the bill back in this committee, where if something did substantially change, would have to come back to government operations. And again, I think your amendment is a good one, but again, will probably be dealt with better in another committee as well. Civil Law and Data Practices. To your second point, Representative Nelson, we did contact the auditor's office. The auditor was not able to be here, but there is a letter packet from the auditor. Any other member discussion while I know some folks are looking over the letter from the auditor? Is there anyone else in the audience that wishes to testify for or against this bill? And there also are two other letters of support in the, well, I shouldn't say also. The auditor's letter is not in support of the bill. There are two other letters in support in your packet as well. Welcome to the committee. Introduce yourself for the record. Let us know who you represent.
Thank you, Chair Sanders, members. My name is Matt Hilgard. I'm a representative from the Association of Minnesota Counties. We are a membership-driven organization that represents all of Minnesota's 87 counties. I just wanted to address one of the issues you guys were talking about today on the issue of cost. As members are familiar, counties are continuously faced with difficult budgetary decisions, especially in rural counties, which SWIFT was talking about today. Significant reductions in county program aid has made it increasingly paramount for counties to reduce costs, all the while maintaining the valued services that we provide our citizens. House File 495, authored by Representative Howe, offers counties the ability to decide at a local level the best mechanism to adhere to the annual audit mandate, while continuing to comply with industry standards and OSA oversight and final sign-off. Last year, AMC compiled an informal survey. It provided us, like I said, with some informal statistics and anecdotal evidence, which indicated a large majority of our members would seek to have this authority for themselves on whether or not to choose the state auditor's office or a private auditing firm. At the root of the discussion today is the desire to preserve a secure level of financial oversight for county governments while also ensuring that the costs are not overly burdensome to the taxpayer. In this regard, AMC will continue to be open to any solutions which will provide greater flexibility and financial relief while maintaining counties' responsibilities to be accountable and transparent with taxpayer dollars. And lastly, before I finish, I did want to mention, just for the record, that the State Auditor's Office has been very helpful and communicative with AMC. Our member counties have addressed these concerns to OSA prior to this conference committee, this committee, and they have been in open dialogue with our counties. So,
thank you, Mr. Hilgard. Any final member discussion? Seeing none, any final comments, Representative Howe?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd just like to say that I'm looking forward to cleaning this up, and I think we can make it a better bill and more concise before we hit the next committee.
Thank you, Representative Howe, and thank you, Ms. Soderbach and Ms. Holmstead, for being here today and for your testimony. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 495 be referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Seeing none, House File 495 is referred to State Government Finance. With that, that concludes the agenda for today. Any final questions or discussion? Just Representative Nelson.
Representative Seltzer did not vote on this because, as she asked me earlier, her husband is a CPA and belongs as a partner in the firm, so she wants to make sure she's excused from voting on it, so there's not a conflict.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. We'll put that in the notes. Thank you, Representative Seltzer. With that, members, we are adjourned. Thank you for committee work today.